Okay, is it working? Are you getting any signal there? Shall we begin? Okay, here we go. This morning's meditation talk is on the five spiritual faculties. This is empowering your meditation, giving it some oomph, giving it some extra power and energy so as we can get into deep states of meditation, so we can see the Dhamma, so that we can get success in our meditation practice. It's called empowering the mind. The Buddha talked about these five indriyas. Indriyas mean controlling faculties, things which empower and drive the mind forward. And those five controlling faculties, in brief, are faith or confidence, energy, mindfulness, samadhi, and wisdom. And usually we start with number one, the confidence, the faith. That confidence and faith has to be in three things. First of all, in the teacher. Number two, in the teachings. And lastly, in one's own ability, in oneself. Now, first of all, having confidence in the teacher, I encourage people to have a look at their teacher and to see what they do, to see if how they behave in private is how they behave in public, to make sure that a teacher is living their teachings. Because otherwise, it's enough to say something, but if one doesn't live it, it means one hasn't really experienced it, it is not part of one's own truth. And sometimes these days people can say all sorts of smart things, all sorts of inspiring things, but they cannot live those teachings. And if they can't live those teachings, you wonder, what's the whole point? So to get faith in a teacher, you should, if at all possible, stay with them for a long time. Look into them, live with them, and find out exactly how they behave. When I was with Ajahn Chah, of course, you were with him many times, many hours of the day, in all sorts of situations. And it was how he reacted to those situations which probably gave you the most faith in his teachings. You realize his teachings worked, because in all difficult situations, he was always at peace and happy, on top of things, no matter whatever happened. And that type of wisdom gave you enormous confidence and faith. I'm not sure if I told you the time when he did an exorcism on this lady who was possessed. It was a very good example of just why you gain faith in such a monk. On this particular occasion, some villagers came to see him. And the headman came first of all with one of his assistants one morning. They came to announce that the previous night, one of the women in the village had got possessed, was crazy, completely out of her mind, ranting and raving. The villagers couldn't do anything, so they're bringing her to see Ajahn Chah, to see if Ajahn Chah could expel the spirit from her. And when they said this, you could hear in the distance the noise of this lady screaming, being dragged into the monastery. She had to be dragged by four or five strong northeastern rice farmers. These were really tough guys, but even they were having a hard time controlling her, subduing her. And as they brought her closer into the monastery, closer to Ajahn Chah's hut, the screams became more audible, and you could hear that she was saying some of the most coarse and profane things inside one of the most holiest of monasteries. She was cursing and swearing and saying terrible things. And all Ajahn Chah would do, he ordered two novices to boil up some water, lots of water. He ordered another two novices to dig a hole, a big hole. And he really ordered them. He said, come on, I want that water quick, lots of it. The hole has to be deep. Dig harder, dig faster. So these poor novices were working so hard and frantically as they dragged this woman in to the presence of this great master. the closer she got, the more violent she became, and had to have another couple of people holding her down to stop her attacking Ajahn Chah. Her eyes were wide, red, like some wild demon. She was foaming at the mouth. And she was so violent and so strong. I don't know if you've ever seen a person possessed like that, but their energies are immense. And all Ajahn Chah would do was to shout at the novices, "Is the hole dug yet? Is the water boiled? I need lots of water." No one knew what Ajahn Chah was doing. But when he gave an order, you followed him. And then he told us what he had planned. He said, "Once this hole is deep enough, we're going to have to throw this woman inside. The water, once it's boiling, we have to pour all over her. That's the only way, and bury her alive. That's the only way we can get rid of this very, very dangerous demon." Now, Ajahn Chah was so unconventional that even I thought he might do that. Certainly the villagers thought he would do that. And most importantly, the woman thought that that was going to happen. And so something strange happened. As soon as she heard what was in store for her, she started calming down. Before the water was boiled and the hole was dug, she was sitting in front of Ajahn Chah, as calm as each one of you, sitting calmly, receiving the five precepts. That's how Ajahn Chah expelled the demon. It was very brilliant. Just his wisdom was unconventional. It was extremely sharp. He saw something called self-preservation. Even if you're crazy, whether it was a demon, whether it was just craziness, if the person really thought, if they didn't get their act together quickly, this is what will happen to them. They quickly get better. I've used that myself many times when a person has been quite sick or acting strangely. I don't threaten them to dig a hole and pour water over them. I just threaten to call the psychiatrist and have them admitted to hospital. As soon as they hear, many of them, as soon as they hear, if they don't calm down quickly, they'll be carted off to some mental hospital. It's amazing how quickly people start to calm down. It's some self-preservation, some not wanting to get into a situation which they find uncomfortable. So because of events like that, you had a great deal of faith in someone like Ajahn Chah. Enough faith to actually to try out those teachings, to put them into practice, and see if they worked. You do need faith, first of all, in the teachings, because the teachings are telling you something you don't know yet. They're taking you to a place you haven't experienced yet. And so because of that, we do need to investigate as much as we can, and then based on that imperfect information, because we haven't been there ourselves, to be able to trust in a teacher. When I say trust in a teacher, the best teacher you can trust in is the Buddha. So investigate what the Buddha said in the suttas. Find out the teachings. And then you can have great trust that this path of meditation, this path of sila, this path of wisdom, is well worth the effort. When a person hasn't got faith in the teachings, then they're not going to be able to put forth the effort to realize those teachings. If you don't think it's worthwhile, then why bother? So it's the idea of seeing the worth. As I said yesterday, to be able to worship these teachings, see the worth in them, is important as a way of increasing one's faith. But even more than having faith in the teacher is having faith in the teachings. Those teachings which we are talking about, you have faith in them, and what happens is, little by little, what you hear, you test out. And if what you test out seems to be true to what the teachings promise you, they say if you do this, then this happens, and you do this, and it does happen, and what happens is good and wonderful, and enjoyable, peaceful, then of course that will encourage you to go even further on the path. In this retreat, I'm encouraging you to go very deeply on the path. And every time you taste a little bit of peace, the mind gets a little happier. the mind feels more freedom. Then I want you to taste that and to say, see, this really works. See, this is actually true. If you meditate, if you let go, if you practice the third noble truth by way of meditation, it actually works, it gives you peace, it gives you happiness, see? I'm encouraging you to have faith in the teachings. One of the great ways of encouraging that faith in the teachings is at the end of every meditation, spend 1 or 2 minutes assessing your mind, looking at it to see how it feels, asking yourself, how much peace is in my mind now? How much freedom, how much happiness? Because at the end of the meditation, something should have worked. Something should have changed. You should feel more peaceful, more happy, more free than when you started. After about 2 or 3 years of meditation as a student, I lost my interest in meditation. It didn't seem to be working for me. I couldn't see any progress. Unfortunately, I met a man who was also a meditator. He was a French man. He gave me this marvelous piece of advice, which I always will thank him for. He said, look, you probably are making progress, but you're not noticing it. He told me to look at the end of your meditation and see if there's been any change. And when I did that, when at the end of a meditation I stopped for a few moments before I opened my eyes and asked myself, has anything happened? Is there any change? I could see there was a change, a big change. I was more peaceful, more calm, more happy. It might not have been as peaceful and calm and happy as I wanted, but it certainly was a big change there. When I looked for it, I noticed it. When I noticed it, I realized there was a result in even the ordinary meditations. And that increased my confidence in the worth of meditation. That made me put more time into meditation when I found it was actually working. So often that people can have a meditation and think, oh, that's not such a good meditation. The half an hour or the hour you spent was not wasted. You would have been even worse if you hadn't sat down and meditated. There is always a result, a good result of meditation. You may think it's a bad meditation, but no. All meditations are good meditations. It's just that some are better than others, but they're all good. It's all much better for you to meditate than not to meditate at all. So understanding that, by checking my own meditation progress at the end of every meditation, I got much more faith in the meditation process. I realized it does work. And you do test out different types of meditation. You test out and find out the one which works for you, so you have faith and confidence in it. Now these days that we have so-called all different types of meditation, we have vipassana meditation, we have breath meditation, we have loving-kindness meditation, there's all sorts of chanting meditation, whatever. There's all sorts of meditations available on the market shelf. And so what should you do as a wise consumer in the spiritual marketplace of today? Test it out. Take a product. Try it. If you're trying out a new washing powder, you've got to try it out to make sure that the new washing powder washes cleaner than the last one. If you want to get the best product, it should be the cheapest and the best. I will tell you now that this meditation is the cheapest and the best. It's great value for money. It comes with a money-back guarantee. You didn't pay any money, therefore you don't get anything back. So this is a marvelous product here. But you've got to test it out, first of all. If you're buying a new car, if you're wealthy enough to buy a car, don't you test drive it, first of all? And if you test drive it and you find it really runs smoothly and it's a very comfortable car, only then won't you buy it. So you test drive these methods first of all. See if they work. And if they work for you, you assess it. If it works, then you have confidence in it. So in this meditation retreat, I'm teaching this way of meditation called the Third Noble Truth Meditation. try it out. Test drive it. See if it works for you. And if it does, then you'll have confidence. Only when you have confidence will you commit yourself to this type of meditation. You can only get its full results when you have full commitment. Too often people half-heartedly do their meditation. They sit down and, well, maybe I'll meditate, maybe I'll think about something else. Maybe I'll do vipassana, maybe I'll do samatha, maybe I'll chant, maybe I'll just read. The only way to test drive it is actually give it full commitment. And usually, from experience of the results, you actually gain that commitment in the end. You fully commit yourself to letting go. Fully commit yourself to Third Noble Truth meditation. Meditating just for the sake of meditating, giving or expecting anything back in return. Just being content, committing yourself to building contentment. Contentment upon contentment upon contentment. You do it 100%. The trouble with people while they don't get success is they don't commit themselves to what they're doing. They only do it half-heartedly. In Perth, I tell people the difference between involvement and commitment. Involvement is only you just give a part of yourself to the process. Commitment, you give 100%. You really give yourself. And I tell people so they really understand the difference between involvement and commitment is a difference between bacon and eggs. Do you understand? The difference between involvement and commitment is the same as the difference between bacon and eggs. With bacon and eggs, think about it. The chicken is only involved, but that pig is committed. The pig gives his whole life to the bacon. The chicken only gives a little egg. That's why you say, in bacon and eggs, the chicken's only involved, but the pig, that's committed. You give your whole life. You give 100%. You don't keep anything back. That's called commitment. So if you want to get success in this meditation, it has to be pig meditation, not chicken meditation. You give your whole body, your whole hour, your whole life to this meditation period. Give it everything you've got, 100% letting go. 100% giving, not expecting anything back in return. A few meditators have said, this doesn't work. They've been letting go. There have been no expectations, no expectations, no expectations, but nothing's been happening. I said, what do you expect? You've got no expectations. You realize when they say, no expectations, no expectations, it's not happening. They have got an expectation. They've got an expectation that something's going to happen. That is why it doesn't happen. They really got to have no expectations, no expectations, no expectations. So if they come and ask me, it didn't work, I said, what did you expect? They always expect it, and that's why it doesn't happen. Contentment, contentment, contentment. I've been doing contentment for the last 3 or 4 days and nothing's happened. Just be content that nothing's happened. Obviously they're not doing contentment with full commitment. All the path of meditation is just building contentment. See how content you can be. With the building of contentment, you're making peace. When you make peace, you have peace. When you have peace, the meditation just goes still all by itself. So you have confidence in the path. Full confidence, full faith. The stronger that faith in the path, the more the mind will follow that path. Fully, completely. And the more the path will work. In fact, sometimes people are given, go to a doctor, and the doctor gives them some course of treatment for their ailment, but haven't got full faith in it. So sometimes they take the pills, sometimes they don't take the pills, sometimes they take something else. And of course, the treatment never works, because they never follow the doctor's instructions. If you have real faith, you've got to follow all the instructions. The third part of faith is faith in one's own ability, which is probably the most crucial of these three places for faith. Too many people think that I can't do it. Too many people think, well, maybe monks can do these things, but I'm a lay person. Sometimes people think, I'm only a woman, how can I ever do all of this? Do not think like that. Everybody could achieve these high states. Unless there's some people who can't become enlightened, who can't get into jhanas. Those are people who have murdered their mother or murdered their father. Have you got any murderers in this hall today? No? Okay, you've passed that one. Unless it's a person who's drawn the blood of a Buddha. Has anyone done that? No? Okay, you passed that test. Has anyone created a schism in the Sangha? Have they ever raped a bhikkhuni or killed an arahat? If you haven't done any of those, then you are able to reach the very peak. You are able to gain jhanas and also to become enlightened. Have faith in your own abilities, in your own possibility for success. Sometimes the most unlikely of people became enlightened, arahats. Angulimala was a serial killer. He managed to become enlightened. Are there any serial killers in this hall today? If Angulimala could do it, why can't you? There were prostitutes who joined the Sangha and became enlightened. I'm not going to ask if there's any prostitutes in this hall. But if they could do it, why can't you? There were people with hardly any education. They could become enlightened. Why can't you? There were dwarfs, hunchbacks, little novices. 7-year-old, 8-year-old novices could become enlightened. Why not you? It's possible. It can happen. Why not you? So you have confidence, full confidence in your own abilities. So often, if the job of a monk, the job of a teacher, is to be like a coach of a sports team. Imagine a coach of, say, a soccer team. They went to see that soccer team and say, today you're going to be playing Manchester United. You've got no chance. They're such a good team, there's no way you're going to win. They're much better than you. The sort of money they get every week is more than you get in a year. They're such a good team. They're professionals. They're international stars. You haven't got a chance. Would that be a good coach? And the team will be doomed to lose. What a good coach does. So, each one of them has got two legs, so have you. They're just a human being, so have you. That ball is round, it goes both ways. Who knows? You can succeed. You can win. Have confidence in your faith. Upsets do happen. This might be your time. Go for it. Try. You can succeed. You will do it. A good coach always inspires a belief that you can do better than you've ever done before, that you can pass your boundaries. A coach removes those obstacles to attainment based on lack of confidence. So this is what I'm doing here today. I'm saying, you've got two legs, just like an arahat. You've got a brain, you've got a mind, just like the Buddha. You can do it. You might be able to succeed. Today, it happens. Flukes do occur. So go for it. Make it go. Believe in yourself. And if you believe in yourself, it's amazing what you can achieve. Jhanas are possible. Not just on this retreat, not just today. Jhanas are possible in the next meditation. Who knows? Go for it. There's this beautiful simile which the Buddha gave to inspire confidence. He said it's like a person has a big water jar, bigger than their height, so they can't peer over to see how much water is inside. All they can see is drops of water dripping into that huge water jar. The point is, they don't know how full it is. Just one more drop might be all it takes, and that water jar overflows. You don't know how close you are to jhana or to enlightenment. Just one more drop may be all it takes for you. You don't know how close or how far you are. So give it the benefit of the doubt. Keep on putting those drops of water in that jar. And one day, when you least expect it, that water jar will overflow. And there's jhana, there's enlightenment. It's giving you confidence that it can be done. That's having faith in your own ability. Sometimes people say they've been trying all week, they can't watch the breath, they've been trying, it doesn't work. If you dwell upon the past, it's very easy to lose your confidence. There's no such word as I can't. There's only the word I haven't yet. Never say I can't watch the breath. It's just I haven't managed yet. Never say I can't be peaceful. Just I haven't been peaceful yet. Never say I can't get into jhanas. Just I haven't entered jhanas yet. If you say you can't, then you won't. Too often we imprison ourselves with the experiences of the past. We look at our past as if it's something which fixes our future. And so what happens is we haven't achieved yet, so we think we can't. That is not rational, that is not logical. It just means you're still filling your jar. Whatever you do in life, never think, I can't. Just, I haven't yet. That opens up the possibilities. It means that no matter what you've been experiencing so far, you can let all of that go. You can be free from the past. If it's been no success at all, don't worry about that. Let that go. If you think that no success in the past means no success in the future, that is wrong thinking. You can change completely in a moment. Many people, they are so far from enlightenment, and just a quick change of heart, and then amazing things happened. Look at those amazing stories. Ananda, living with the Buddha for so many years, 25 years I think he was the attendant of the Buddha. All that time listening to these great teachings, being with the best teacher, the most inspiring teacher of ever. And he was so close to the Buddha. And when the Buddha died, he still wasn't enlightened, Ananda. Imagine you had a teacher in your presence for so long, and you still hadn't understood. You still weren't fully enlightened. He thought, oh my goodness, I wasted my opportunity and time. How could I become enlightened now? And the pressure really was on Ananda, when a short time later, the monks headed by Mahakasapa decided to meet together, to bring all the teachings of the Buddha together. They invited 500 monks. 499 were fully enlightened arahats, many with great psychic powers. 499 had made it. The one who hadn't was Ananda. Imagine I told you that all the people on this retreat had got jhanas, except you. All the people on this retreat were fully enlightened, except you. And you had one more night to go. What would you do? My goodness, you'd give it everything you've got. And that's what happened to Venerable Ananda. He really gave it everything he'd got. Meditating all night, walking and sitting, and really meditating, not messing around. And when dawn came, what had happened? Nothing. He was as far from enlightenment as he ever was. So what did he do? He decided to go and take a nap. And just when he started to take a nap, just before his head hit the pillow, he became the 500th arahat, fully enlightened. Which is why I've been telling you, many of you, to try the Ananda method of enlightenment. Go and take a nap, maybe just before your head hits the pillow. who only hits the pillow once a day, you've only got one chance every day, but hits the pillow several times. Why did that happen? Because he let go. No expectations. He gave up. It's amazing teaching why everything happened to Ananda. He thought he was just so far away. In fact, he was so close. What he needed to do was to stop trying. Understand? So you see, you have confidence and faith in yourself. You can stop trying anytime. When you stop trying, you let go, everything starts to happen all by itself. So have faith, have confidence that you, even you, can do it. You do not need a university degree. Did I tell you that story of that monk in Thailand who couldn't even pass grade one? This was one of the famous monks in Thailand. When he went to school as a young boy, after grade one, the first year in primary school, where all you learn is to draw silly pictures or do plasticine, he couldn't even pass grade one. The teacher had to put him back a year, make him repeat grade one at school. All the other children went on to grade two. All his friends advanced. He had to repeat the year. After the second year in grade one, again, the teacher just couldn't do this. She couldn't pass him on to grade two. He still hadn't learned the basic lessons. So he had to repeat grade one, the first year of school, for a third year. After 3 years, still, he was not competent to go into grade two. Imagine failing your very, very first year at school three times at primary level. My goodness, that's stupid. In fact, the villagers thought he was so stupid, they never even thought he could ever learn how to plow the fields or look after the water buffaloes in the village. They thought he was so stupid, the only thing they could do with him was to send him to the monastery and make him into a monk. In those days in Thailand, the monks were repositories of not only good monks, but also people who had no other place to go. So they ordained this little fellow as a novice monk in his village temple. And his village teacher, the abbot, was just so kind and patient with this young man, spent hours every day for a couple of years trying to teach him the chanting. But this young man, he just couldn't learn even any chanting. Not even the Namo Tassa. After a while, even the very kind abbot gave up. Said, I can't do anything with you. And so they sent this young man to the last resort, the forest monastery. I'm not saying that all forest monks become forest monks because of problems like this. But they said, well, he can't learn anything, let's send him to the forest monastery. And the first forest monastery they sent this young man to, when the abbot told him, just to watch your breath, breathing in, breathing out, it was the easiest thing in the world for him. He could do that without any problem. His mind was so simple, so uncluttered, so few thoughts, that he soon gained all the deep meditations, and he became one of the famous meditation teachers of Thailand. So all of you who didn't do well at school, you may be one of the great meditation teachers of the future. So even if you are intellectually, according to school standards, not so good, you can still become enlightened. If you're a doctor with many PhDs, you can still become enlightened. The point is, anyone can become enlightened. Even you. So may that give you confidence and faith. You can do this. Without that confidence and faith, you will be putting a hindrance in front of you. You'll be meditating but think, I can't do this. You'll be sitting there thinking, what am I doing this for? What a waste of time. I bet everyone else is becoming peaceful but not me. You're lacking confidence, lacking belief, not giving yourself a chance. Give yourself that chance. You can do it. Come on. I'm like the coach in the stands of a football team. Come on, you can do it. Come on, kick the ball. You can beat it. Come on, come on. And when you come to see me and say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, it's so nice. I say, hooray, another goal has been scored for Buddhism. And as a coach, I clap and I cheer. So I'm your coach, encouraging you to actually increase your performance, to excel your PB. You know what PB means? Personal best in meditation. To go further than you've ever done before. To see, yes, I am capable as well. Already people have sat meditation for longer than they've ever done before without any problem at all. Wow, I can do this. This is amazing. It works. So go for it. Only when you have that confidence, that faith, will you have any energy. When you lose confidence, that's when you lose your energy. You don't even try anymore. You just sit down here, thinking about this, thinking about that, not even bothering. We need energy to meditate. Real big energy, which all goes into mindfulness. That energy comes from confidence, from faith, from inspiration. If you are dull or sleepy, remind yourself of all the other men or women like you who also became fully enlightened. Remind yourself that the arahats of all the past ages and countries were ordinary people like you. They became enlightened. I can. It gives us inspiration. The Buddha said that when you walk the Eightfold Path, this is where it leads. It has to lead to this destination. And you consider, I am walking that Eightfold Path. If I am walking that Eightfold Path, this is where it must lead. I'm going in the right direction. Keep on going. It gives you encouragement, and that encouragement gives you energy. It gives you energy to actually to sit on that meditation cushion. It gives you energy to close your eyes. It gives you energy to remember what you're supposed to be doing. And follow the path. You need energy to let go. Energy of mindfulness, which sees clearly what's happening and puts all the path factors in place one by one. You'll find the more confidence and faith, inspiration you have, the more energy is available to you. But most importantly, have that confidence in yourself. If you have that confidence in yourself, you're unlocking a great store of energy. Yes, I can do this. I've got great confidence. Sometimes I put myself in situations which are impossible. They shouldn't happen. I shouldn't be able to do anything. Things like not sleeping for several days and then giving a talk. Going on tours where you give many, many talks, and between talks, you're traveling overnight between the continents. I'm thinking, there's no way I should be able to give a talk. No way I should have a nice meditation. But I like pushing the boundaries. I like challenging expectations. Sometimes I've gone back to my monastery in Perth after an incredibly busy weekend. Lots of things going on. And I'm really exhausted, physically drained. And it's time to go to bed. But I think, no, I'm not going to go to bed. I'm going to just sit down and meditate and see what happens. It's amazing how many times these things shouldn't happen, but they do. You get into deep meditation when it's supposed to be the least possible time, least possible opportunity. What I've done there is actually to know that you are not limited at all. If you have confidence, you can do anything. Faith moves mountains. If you have faith in yourself, you can move the mountain of ignorance and delusion which is blocking you from enlightenment. You can do anything. If you want to, you know the way, you can get into jhanas in the next few minutes. Faith can move mountains. Faith can move the mountains of ignorance and delusion. go for it. Energy comes from such faith. When you have energy, you're buzzing. You're buzzing with energy, but that energy does need to be focused. Restlessness only comes when we don't know how to use energy. When we have some bit of wisdom, we can focus that energy, channel it into the right place. Which you've heard me saying, that energy has to be channeled into mindfulness. So the mindfulness becomes very strong, very bright. You become alert, you become awake. You can see what's happening, you can see what you're doing. The mind becomes clear to you. This is why in those five spiritual faculties, from confidence we build energy, huge energy. From that energy we build mindfulness. The third of these five controlling faculties. If you're not alert, if you don't know what's going on, you can't get anywhere. Too often we meditate, we're not quite sure what we're doing or why. The meditation period passes by because we're not really alert. We're not really overseeing what's happening. At the beginning of the meditation retreat, you can't do much about that. Dozing less dullness is part of the beginning. But if you follow the instructions with faith, if your energy has been flowing into the mindfulness rather than into the doing, if you've not been struggling but you've been making peace, you should start to experience increased mindfulness, greater energy, a greater ability to see what you're doing and why. It's like a supervisor at work. A supervisor at work doesn't actually do anything. He doesn't actually do the jobs of the workers. The supervisor, her job is just to see what the workers are doing, to keep them working, to make sure they're on the job. Mindfulness, when it gets bright, oversees your mind and makes sure that you are on the job. It makes sure that you are not doing anything, just watching. Make sure that you are not trying to struggle. You're not making war, but you're making peace. Mindfulness overlooks what's happening and makes sure that you're walking the path. When that mindfulness is very strong, not only do the instructions remain very clearly in your mind so you don't lose the way, but also what you see with greater clarity. It's much easier to watch the subtle breath when your mindfulness has become bright. When energy is increased, you can watch the most refined things which in ordinary mindfulness you just can't notice. When the lights are dull, you can't see the dirt on the floor. When the lights are very, very, very bright, even the smallest stains become perceptible. When the mindfulness becomes very bright in your mind, even the smallest mistakes become very easy to be seen. You notice them straight away. Not only that, but the path becomes very clear. With the increase in mindfulness, powerful mindfulness, that generates the fourth controlling faculty, samadhi. The fourth spiritual faculty is peace, stillness, jhana. They call that a spiritual power because people who experience states of stillness feel the power of that state. Mindfulness is the brightness of the mind. Samadhi is its stillness. It's bright, and now it's still. It can maintain its attention on one thing for long periods of time in order to fully understand what it is looking at. Samadhi becomes extremely strong. You're so peaceful, so still, and you feel it as a power. Your mind is empowered, your body is empowered. Which is why even teaching samadhi in business means that executives feel empowered their mind is bright and clear, it's easy to see through complex problems and find the right answers. Samadhi and mindfulness are just mental training to make use of this mind, to make it fit and healthy in the same way anyone playing sports at a high level has to train their body to be at the peak of fitness. Any sports person at the peak of fitness these days gets huge financial rewards. But you've got to stay at that peak of physical fitness. Mindfulness and samadhi give your mind the peak of fitness. Your mind can do things ordinary minds can't do. You are skillful, agile, able to remember, able to make decisions clearly, accurately. That's why this practice is not just for people who live in the monasteries. It's also for people who live in those concrete office towers, who make decisions which affect the fortunes of many hundreds of workers and investors. This is how to succeed in business. Now more than that, once you get samadhi and you get this powerful mind state, that is this insight happens, wisdom, panya, seeing things the way they truly are. Once you are still enough, empowered enough, then you find you can see, you can think, you can understand. Even when you're thinking out a problem, how often is it you can't maintain the focus long enough to really think through a problem? Too often the mind wanders backwards and forth, never really penetrating to the heart of the matter. How often is it when you have a problem, you start thinking about it, never finished? The mind is just so inefficient. But if you develop mindfulness and samadhi, you can empower this mind to have wisdom. You really start to see things. You understand. All of the wise monks or nuns that you know all get their wisdom not through the books. You could get that wisdom if you can read those books. They get it through the empowerment of the mind, through mindfulness and samadhi. That's where wisdom comes from. And that wisdom becomes the strongest of the powers. It is the wisdom which can cut through the problems of life. Seeing the problem, overcoming it to give you freedom and happiness. Which is why that people come to the monks for advice. They borrow the monk's wisdom, because the wisdom is what solves the problems of life. These are the five powerhouses, the five spiritual faculties, what empowers your life in peace, happiness and freedom. Some people, it's actually, this is from the commentaries. The commentaries mistakenly say that these faculties should be balanced, as if there could be too much faith, as if there could be too much energy, too much mindfulness, as if there could be an excess of samadhi, an excess of wisdom. That is a teaching which came after the time of the Buddha, which is patently absurd. And I don't mind saying that. You cannot have enough faith in the Buddha's teachings. You cannot have too much energy. The more energy, the better. You cannot have too much mindfulness, nor can you have too much samadhi. Look what happens when you go to the extremes of samadhi. Not just first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. After fourth jhana comes the four immaterial attainments. The first of which is the realm of infinite space. The second, unlimited consciousness. The third, the realm of absolute nothingness. The fourth, this amazing experience of neither perception nor non-perception. Now that's going to the highest, the second highest of samadhis. Above that is cessation, nirodha samapatti. anyone who emerges from that highest states of samadhi, that extreme states of samadhi, when they emerge, they're either a non-returner or fully enlightened. That has to happen. There's only those two alternatives. If you get to that state of nirodha, samapatti, enlightenment, or the next best thing, is guaranteed. That's what happens when you have the extreme states of samadhi. So you cannot have too much samadhi, nor can you have too much wisdom. The more wisdom, the better. So you don't balance these things. You don't think, oh, I've got too much wisdom, I should have some faith. Oh, I've got too much energy, I should have samadhi. Oh, I've got too much samadhi, I must lessen it. No, the more the better of any one of these things. You, as we say in Australia, you go for it. More the better of these five spiritual faculties. Because they empower you. They give you energy, they give you mindfulness, they give you stillness, they give you power, wisdom, faith. And little by little, these become stronger and stronger and stronger. If you really have strong faith, really strong faith, powerful faith, you're on the path to being a stream winner. This is what the Buddha said, asadhanasami. Soon, you will actually realize the fruit of that faith. If you have so much faith, you must walk the Eightfold Path. That's what the Buddha said. If you've got real faith, you'll follow your teacher's instructions, the Buddha's instructions. What the Buddha said, you will do. The Buddha said, keep five precepts, right, that's it, I'm going to keep five precepts. Because the Buddha said it. Must be right. That's the duty of faith. The Buddha said, you've got to give dana, you give dana. That's what the Buddha said. The Buddha said, you've got to meditate, you do meditate. That's it. You just have to do it. You've got that degree of faith. The Buddha said, you should practice right speech, right action, right livelihood. You've got no choice. You do it. If the Buddha said, you have to give up greed and lust, you just do it, because the Buddha said. If he said, you've got to give up hatred and ill will and scolding, you do it. The Buddha said it. If you've got that degree of faith, you just walk the Eightfold Path. There can never be too much faith. Nor can there be too much wisdom. The wisdom person knows why you should do those things. Explains it to you in detail until you realize it's common sense. You have to walk that path. There's no other reasonable alternative. Either way, you become one on the path to being a stream winner. The sadhanusari, one who walks empowered mostly by faith. The dhammanusari, one who walks empowered mostly by wisdom. You're on the path to seeing the Dhamma. So these are the five power sources which drive the engine to Nirvana. So remember what these are. Have confidence in yourself. Have confidence in this path. Have confidence in your teachers. Gain energy from that confidence. Really build up the energy. But put it into the mindfulness, not into the doer. Allow samadhi, stillness, to grow. You can't let go enough. You can't be still enough. And gain this powerful wisdom, which you see for yourself in stillness. You don't gain wisdom through thinking. You gain wisdom through seeing in silence. Through knowing in silence. Through still mindfulness. So those are the five indriyas, the five spiritual faculties. May each one of them grow and grow and grow until they're so huge they take you all the way to jhanas, to enlightenment, and out of this world. Any questions about the five spiritual faculties? Any questions about what I've just said? No? Okay. Yeah, go on. How about balancing? You don't balance the five Indriyas. You just keep building up and building up and building up as much as you can. There's no such thing as balancing in the Buddhist text. You just give everyone as much as you've got. If your sadha is really, 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 really strong, make it even stronger. Don't you have to balance it with wisdom, it will come by itself. You don't have to neglect one or lessen one. Balancing means if there's some part is too heavy, you take the weights off so it's lighter. That is a teaching which comes from the commentaries which you don't find anywhere in the suttas. That's why you don't need to balance the Indriyas. The Buddha never told you to. Therefore, if you have faith in the Buddha's teachings, you don't balance them. You just, each one, grow, 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 grow. Each one has not got a limit. You increase each one. Not about balancing, just increasing. And one flows from the other, as I said today. Whether from faith or from wisdom, you grow in energy. And energy, if it flows into mindfulness, empowers mindfulness, which gives rise to samadhi, which gives rise to more wisdom. They support each other. If you focus on one of these, any one of these, keep building up, building up, building up, all the other ones are dragged along in the wake. Build these up. Yeah. From jhana, how do you gain insight? You just see the most powerful things. You don't even need to try. After you emerge from jhana, it's almost certain you say, wow, what was that? Automatically, you see. When you go up to the Twin Towers, to the top story, to the observation deck, how do you see the view? What do you do to see the view? My goodness, you'd be stupid not to see the view. It's all around you. You can't miss it. If you travel up to the Twin Towers, I guarantee, unless you're a blind woman, you will see that view. I guarantee, if you get into a jhanas, unless you're blind, stupid, you will see the insights which those jhanas give you. Insights come naturally. You see because it's there. Why are there different levels of insight? It's not different levels of insight, different depths of insight. Seeing further and further and further. But really, all one does need to see is the foundation of insight. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Any one of those will bring along the other two. If you see anicca, I don't mean rise and fall, I mean disappearance. I'll tell this simile tonight. Rise and fall is not like looking at an ocean and seeing the waves rise and fall. That's ordinary. Real insight into anicca is not just seeing the waves come up and go down. It's seeing the whole ocean disappear together with all the landmass which contains it. Now that is unexpected. When you're watching the sea, you don't expect or the ocean to suddenly vanish from existence, together with all the mountains and beaches. Or it's like watching a television. It's easy to understand superficial anicca as these programs on the TV coming and going, lights flashing. Even it's okay, superficial, to know that when you turn the television off, there's no programs on the screen. But real insight is when you're watching the television. It's not just the programs which come and go. The whole television set disappears. The TV vanishes. And that is not covered in the warranty. Now when that happens, that is called insight. deep inside, what you always thought was there is no longer there. You're seeing more data than you ever expected. Television sets are impermanent, more impermanent than you thought. Oceans, mountains vanish before your eyes in a flash. Now that's what we call impermanence. That's what happens as a result of jhanas. Now that shocks you, unexpected, rocks you. That's the sort of insight which smashes the fetters of attachment. That's what I mean by insight. Suffering, what you always thought was happiness, now you see is suffering. You've been in a prison all your life. You think the prison is okay. Now you see how much suffering it is. Anatta. What you thought was you. What was obvious was you. What you've always taken to be yourself is now seen clearly to be empty, nothing at all. Those deep insights will only happen as a result of jhana. As the jhana is so clear, it's obvious, it should be obvious. To a slow, dull person, they may have to get into jhana very often. But to a quick-witted person, the evidence of those experiences becomes so shattering of your delusions. I can't see how many powerful deep insights can't happen. They happen as a natural result. Which is why the Buddha said, anyone who attains jhana, samadhi pachaya yata bhuta jhana dasana. From samadhi you see things as they truly are. You see things as they truly are. As a result of samadhi. Even in this one beautiful sutta, they say you don't need to make the will to make the decision. Oh, now that they've entered samadhi, may I see things as they truly are. It happens naturally. Tamata, the Buddha said. It's a natural result that one who attains samadhi does see things as they truly are. You don't need to do anything. Why? Because there's no one inside who can do anything anyway. This is a natural process. This is a path which leads in that direction, whether you struggle or not. Actually, each one of you is already on the bus to Nibbana. You've already heard too much. This bus to Nibbana, you may ring the bell, you may press the alarm button, but I'm afraid it doesn't stop. You cannot get off. There's only one destination to the Nibbana bus, and that is Nibbana. It's like getting on a plane, on an airplane, which has got its destination to Perth. You may struggle, you may put forth effort by walking up and down that airplane, thinking you're going to make it get there faster. You may walk up and down, you may run, you may strive, you may struggle, you may just go to sleep in your chair. Whatever you do, whether you are lazy and you go to sleep, or whether you rush up and down, you will get to Perth at the same time. All your effort is unnecessary. Put the effort into the knowing, not into the struggling. The Nibbana bus is destined for Nibbana. Once you're on it, that's where it ends up, like getting on a plane. So now you're on the Nibbana bus, now you're on the aircraft going to Nibbana. Sit down and enjoy the in-flight service. That's all you need to do. Enjoy the beautiful breath, the jhanas. Enjoy the in-flight service on the bus to Nibbana. You got another one? Go on. Okay. I know there's always somebody on the aircraft who always presses a button for the flight attendants. So ding ding, what do you want this time? Go on. are those states of insight, the stage of enlightenment. Okay, this evening I'm going to give a talk on deep insight. That's a great time to talk on these stages of enlightenment. These are the stages on the bus journey to enlightenment. So, come this evening, 8 p.m., you'll find the answers to all your questions. Okay, one last question, yeah? Why do they say Vipassana meditators don't need jhanas? Everyone needs jhanas. Just read what the Buddha said. What is the Eightfold Path? What's the first fact of the Eightfold Path? Samadhi, right view. The second fact of the Eightfold Path? Samasankapa, right thought. One of those right thoughts is Nekamasankapa, thoughts of renunciation. Thoughts of giving up the five sense world. That's the first, number one, of Samasankapa. What's the third of the Eightfold Path? Right speech followed by? Right action, number five. Right open, number six. Number seven. And number eight. What does right concentration mean? Samasamadhi. What is the explanation of Samasamadhi in every part of the sutta where the Buddha explains it? He said Samasamadhi means... Surely you know this. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, or fourth jhana. That is what Samasamadhi means. That's how the Buddha explains Samasamadhi consistently in every occasion, even in the Satipatthana Sutta. Monks, what is Samasamadhi? First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. That, monks, is Samasamadhi. The eighth factor of the path is jhana. There's no way to gain enlightenment without following that Eightfold Path. Not the Sevenfold Path, not the Sixfold, Fivefold, Fourfold, Threefold, Twofold, not the Onefold Path. If any factor of that path was not necessary, then don't you think the compassionate, wise Buddha would have said, okay, you don't need to have, say, mindfulness. Just do the other seven factors. Okay, you don't need to have right livelihood. As long as you're not attached to wrong livelihood, that's okay. He said, no, that's an important factor of the path. A factor means it has to be fulfilled for the results to occur. So it's obvious to anybody, especially if you attain these states, that jhanas are necessary for enlightenment. There is no way around that. If you don't believe me, go and see the referee. Go and look in the suttas and look it up for yourself. Don't need the commentaries, they were written later. Look at the original teachings of the Buddha. Find it out for yourself. Jhanas are necessary. Otherwise, I wouldn't teach these. If there was an easier way, of course, we teach that easier way. But this is part of the way. Jhanas are stages of letting go. You have to let go to become enlightened. That's why you have to pass through that stage of letting go to go to the fuller stage of letting go. You cannot bypass it. Okay, I think that's enough for now because we've got interview times. But for those who want to know more about the insights that is coming this evening, deep insights, why not now? Deep insights. Okay, thank you. So please meditate. You can do it. Now is your time. You've got a heart, you've got a mind, you've got two legs, just like anyone else. Go for it. You can attain everything which was attained in the time of the Buddha. The doors to the deathless are open. Go through now.